So I said this before, and I think it's really true, that the code, what it's trying to do is really get a deal done at some point in the process. And ideally, what the code is trying to tell you is that we want you guys to cut a deal before a motion is ever filed. And one reason the code does that is once you file a motion, I mean, the process to getting to and through a trial is unbelievably fast. The statute says you're supposed to start trial 14 days after you file the motion. The statute says you can extend, the court can extend up to 7 days. So after 21 days after you file this motion, you're going to trial. And it's an unbelievable amount of work. So all of the action really here is before you file the motion. And maybe I'll let Greg talk a little bit about how these kind of these things fit in your grander restructuring strategy. When I get the phone call, it's basically, we know we're going to have an 1113 issue, so we want you to come in and handle it. But I have to fit within the overall structure of the bankruptcy case, which is usually a much bigger picture.
Right. So in Westmoreland, which we filed in Houston about just over a year ago, and it's the same in Mission Coal and the Patriot bankruptcies, the Twinkies bankruptcy, generally the way 1113, 1114 fits in is we reached an agreement with our secured lenders where they were going to take the company and reorganize, but that reorganization was contingent on labor savings. So the desired labor savings sort of formed the basis of engagement with the unions and the retirees. Even though Mike said that it's designed to foster settlement, it very rarely results in settlement for political dynamics within the unions until you actually get to trial. But in those instances, we make a proposal to the unions with the backing of our secured creditors, they reject it, and then you go into litigation in the bankruptcy court. Typically, on the legal side, restructuring support agreements or backstop commitments or rights offering agreements, with a labor-heavy case, we'll typically have milestones or other kind of thresholds you have to reach. And, it's sort of a race against time. In Westmoreland, for example, and some of you experienced this firsthand when you were representing other parties, we had a very tight deadline to get this done. Otherwise, the secured lenders were going to walk away. That's pretty common. And the threat of the termination of the RSA and the threat of the litigation dates kind of helped, once it was filed, to kind of push people to reach an agreement that our buyer, plan sponsor found acceptable.
I mean, Steve, you want to add anything about the negotiation with the economic stakeholders when you know that 1113 is in the background, because everybody knows that the CBAs as they exist are not sustainable. The only question is, what are they going to be like on the back end? And you still have to negotiate your RSA or whatever economic deal you have with your lenders, knowing all of that.
Yeah, listen, the reality is we would love to get to RSAs with our lenders in Westmoreland or Patriot or wherever, where we didn't have to recut the CBAs or potentially run an 1114 process. The unfortunate reality, particularly as it related to those two companies and companies in the coal space, is those companies just could not afford those CBAs and those retiree benefits. And so try as we might, we could not convince the secured lenders to be willing to own the assets coming out of the Chapter 11 with those constructs in place. And so what that meant was we needed to either recut those CBAs, negotiate them, whatever it is, or as the milestones dictated, if we didn't renegotiate them to their liking, then we were forced to institute 1113, 1114 motion. And we ran a process, which I'm sure we'll get to later. I mean, we ran a process to find out if there was anybody that would be willing to own those assets without doing that.
And maybe just to chime in, just to give an analogy, there's not many unions in this part of the country, as Mike and Jackson Walker told us when we were filing Westmoreland. The way 1113, 1114 works is it's effectively akin to a cram down provision that you would rely on if you were to cut a deal with your secured lender and you were trying to pressure your unsecured bondholders or unsecured creditors committee to go along. You have a deal that you go and say, hey, this is executable, the court will approve it, I'm the impaired consenting class, I'm going to drag you along. And similar to that, 1113 and 1114 basically gives you the ability to force a labor or retiree arrangement onto a dissenting class of former employees.
Well, I think the only caveat I would have to that, but you still have to prove as the debtor, proposing the making a proposal. Yes. You have to prove that it's fair and reasonable, and you have to prove that it was rejected by the union without good cause.
Right.
That's something that so you can't cram them down without proving that what you're proposing to do actually makes sense.
Correct.
So, I mean, there's a few just common sense things that I tell clients and I try to tell lenders before we develop a proposal for Section 1113 and 1114 relief. I think point one is that the process, it's just not fun. It is an awful process from beginning to end, and you really should only do it if it is absolutely necessary, which is what Congress had in mind when they passed the statute. And if you're going to go forward and do something like this, you have to realize, both for the short and long term, that there have to be, you know, business operations and compensation arrangements that people are going to be willing to live with. Long term, you have to have employees to run your business. And short term, if what you're trying to do is cram a set of obligations on the union that it doesn't want, even if you succeed, you convince the court that you satisfied your burden, the court lets you reject the CBA, you do, the union can strike. They have the, unless you're in the airline context or some context governed by the Railway Labor Act, the union would have an absolute right to strike, so they can just put you out of business. They do not have to show up. That's what happened in Hostess, and that's what happened in any case if you try to be too aggressive and cut to the bone when you don't need to. We did, in Westmoreland, we did go to trial. Judge Jones ruled in our favor. We had to reject the CBAs. We did have a couple days of strike before we were able to reach a deal with the unions. So even if you win, one of the things you're doing is you're handing a little bit of economic leverage to the unions, because they know, just as you do, that if they don't show up, you don't have a business.